Hello and welcome along to the RTE Rugby Podcast. Week 18 of the United Rugby Championship is upon us. Final round of the regular season. Final games of the season for Ulster and Connacht, who miss out on the playoffs. Munster still have a lot of work to do to make sure their last game of the season isn't this Friday night against Benetton. Johnny Holland and Bernard Jackman are with me today. And fellas, likely two, possibly just one Irish side playing Champions Cup rugby next season. Birch, regardless of what happens this weekend, does all of this have to be a bit of a wake-up call for the IRFU?
Yeah, I think so. I said it on yesterday the other night. I think, bar the domestic game, which I think is starting to thrive again and in a healthy place and getting healthier every year. I think overall, you look at the results, third in the Six Nations, never really hit our straps. I think from Grand Slams over the last couple of years to wooden spoons in the under-20s, that's probably the most worrying. And then obviously, from a women's point of view, I think the defeat to Scotland burst the bubble a little bit. I know there's improvement, but that was a disappointing defeat in the last round. Finished third, but that probably was a bit of a blow. Obviously, there's a bit of turmoil behind the scenes, coaching-wise, etc. And that, we've had two interim coaches with the senior provincial sides. I don't know when we've ever had that before. And, you know, with one round to go, Munster have to still qualify, and hopefully they will, for the playoffs in the Champions Cup, and Ulster and Connacht are dead. I think it's a big reset. And unfortunately, it's a reset without massive success over the last 3 or 4 years. Obviously, 2023, the Grand Slam was brilliant, but the World Cup exit, at provincial level, no Champions Cup for quite a while. Munster obviously have a URC in recent years, but a lot of resets without the actual success that you normally reset after. A big job for David Humphreys. I mean, are we missing David Nusafora, or did David Humphreys basically receive a hospital pass? That's the question. The RFU have a lot of work to do to try and get things going again.
And Johnny, it's one thing I always think about with the URC that I suppose, like, you look at Connacht down the years and they're kind of always at a disadvantage, or the Irish provinces, I think, have a competitive disadvantage just with the way the fixtures go in the URC, so that, you know, an extra three of their fixtures are against Irish provinces compared to, you know, when you have the derbies factored in. But, like, just to use Munster as an example, you can't even apply that excuse this season, because they've beaten Connacht twice, they've beaten Ulster twice. Half of their victories this season have actually come against the other Irish provinces again. The worrying thing is it's games against Cardiff. It's Zebre earlier on in the season. It's a home match against Edinburgh during the Six Nations. The kind of games that you would actually be expecting them to pick up not just wins, but bonus point wins in. This is where they're kind of falling apart. And I'm just using Munster as the example because we would always associate them with being in the Champions Cup and, you know, having their path to the Champions Cup assured relatively early. There is a lot to be concerned about just in the wider Irish interprovincial kind of system, regardless of what happens this weekend.
Yeah, there is. And I think, like, when Birch says it like that, you wonder why you ever thought it wasn't coming down the tracks. But, like, when you watch the game passively as a supporter and you don't think too deeply about it week to week, you watch results and watch games, you'd be like, it's in an all right spot, you know what? And then all of a sudden thinking, how do we get here with two already out and one possibly out, with Leinster obviously top of the pile. And obviously, look, that's the gap that people are speaking about. Leinster are safe, and, you know, it'll be a travesty if they don't go on and win it. I know there's competitive teams within the top eight, but they have to go on and win it at this stage, and that's a different topic. But, you know, you kind of wonder how we get there, because they were all in the mix as well in the last couple of weeks. You might never have thought about it, but then actually when you lay it out and their budgets are being cut, their squad numbers are being cut, you see the numbers. Like, we spoke about Ulster recently not having a massive squad, and then I actually said if they can get bodies on their feet, they're a good side. And next thing, there was a release that their players are literally being released, like the Alan O'Connors of the world, you know what I mean? Like, that's not going to help anyone. So I think that's what when you look under the bonnet, I suppose, that's what's going on. And that's why we are where we are in terms of the Irish provinces, which is a bit of a travesty. Like, you know, when We spoke recently as well about Munster possibly not making a top six at the time when I was playing my last season. The top six is very competitive. A top eight now, and having to play Bennett on home to get into it, like that is worrying, you know. And when you say it, they've had some big results, but they've also had some very poor results. And the inconsistency there is seen across Ulster, Connacht, and Munster. And Munster have a very good squad, you know. That's what I think that the worrying thing is, like they actually do have the bodies. And you know, if they can, I wrote about it yesterday, that if they can get something going in this Benetton game, if they can sort out a line out, like you look at their attack is fourth in the league by whatever stats the URC use, because their transition, their offload, their own structure is actually quite good. And Tom Farrell's in the middle of all that, as Birch has been highlighting, you know. But you know, they have a lot of really good stuff, but it's the inconsistency, it's a set piece, it's the things that leave them down would really frustrate you, like, isn't it? And I think, like, you know, we're used to having the Irish provinces ahead of at least the Welsh provinces, the Scottish, or the regions, the Scottish teams. All of a sudden, the Welsh teams are above us. And I know they're fighting to stay in the top eight as well, but like, what a turnaround when you look at the state of Welsh rugby, and they're still competing at regional level as easily as we are with the system that we've had. Like, what has gone on?
And I think that's the, I'm not sure, has your line frozen there, Birch? Oh, you're back with us.
No, I'm here.
Yeah, your head is moving. I can see it. One thing that does jump out this season is it's all the coaching disruption that's gone on. And for years you would have seen the likes of the Welsh and the Scottish clubs looking on at envy at what goes on in Ireland and all the stability that they have and the top quality coaches and the way the teams just consistently played week on week. But at Munster, you've a well-documented coaching mess over the course of the season, which still actually hasn't been ironed out if you factor in Alex Codling's kind of status isn't fully locked in as to when he's going to be there next season. Ulster first full season with Richie Murphy, but he's only getting his own coaching ticket together from next season. He's still been trying to put that together. Connacht, Pete Wilkins leaving, assistants both being let go and leaving for elsewhere, so we don't really have clarity yet on what's happening there. It's like, is that the biggest element of it this season? And do you see that getting better, or do you see, like, have the standards just got higher, or the demands just got higher that we've seen so much change around coaches in the last year or two?
I don't know what's down. I don't actually think of the URC has drastically gone up. I think we've dropped off, to be fair. Like, I think if you look at the Sharks and the Stormers, you couldn't, don't tell me that they've had brilliant seasons. Like, they're both unbelievably inconsistent. The Welsh regions, you know, fair play to Cardiff, what they're doing with the squad they have is admirable, but we have to expect that we're better than them. I mean, like, the only thing I would say is they have shown unbelievable resilience. Scarlets too, you know, with all the shit that's happening, there's still no agreement signed for next season in terms of funding. Like, they as a playing group, both Scarlets and first the Ospreys as well, have probably batted above the sum of their parts, or they play better. They play better than maybe you would logically say they would, and they've got other players apart, like Adam Beard, etc. Like, they're not able to keep their best players. And yes, they have ground out results probably more often than you would have expected to. So they deserve massive credit for that. But we have to question our own performance. And I agree. I think Munster were decent for long periods of that game against Ulster. The La Rochelle game is obviously a game they can refer back to. And if they went into the playoffs, you would actually fancy them to be able to find that little bit extra. But it's the consistency, and we've seen some very poor performance. Edinburgh in Cork was as bad as the most performance I've seen since Zebre away, you know, which probably in some way, you know, accelerated the issue with Graham Rantree. The difference, the challenge is that our decisions around coaching have been reactive. And if you take the Connacht example, like, has been a slow reaction, you know. So we still don't know what their coaching setup like. We know Biddy Millard is coming in. We know Rob Sieb is coming in, but we don't really know the status of the overall picture. Munster, I think Clayton McMillan, we all think, will be a breath of fresh air. He's obviously got great stature, but what is he allowed to bring around him? You know, what is Alex Coddick staying or going? And for players in Ireland, Like, I think if you're French, you're used to these shocks and you're used to this turmoil as part and parcel of French rugby. And I don't think it's always a bad thing. If it gets an instant reaction, if you look at Racing, post Stewart, they got themselves out of relegation trouble, and but in Ireland we do tend to like consistency and stability better, and be proactive in terms of having the right coaches in at the start of the season and generally finishing with those. That generally leads to Irish teams performing better. And I just think this year there's been a knee-jerk reaction. I think some of it's around actually coaches maybe getting the blame for maybe budgetary squeezes, which hasn't given coaches the best talent. So I was very clear a year ago when I saw all the Connacht players departing. I felt it was too much in one season, too much talent going out and not enough coming in. And lo and behold, by Christmas, Pete Wilkins is under all kinds of pressure, and there's a change that happens for next season. So that's something. And then again, with Ulster, I think it's great Richie Murphy's been able to get his own coaching staff, but my understanding is that Ulster aren't bringing a nine in. So, so are you stronger or weaker without John Cooney? I'd say most people would say you're weaker, starting the season without someone who's contributed so much. I'm not sure if they're bringing a 10 in, and that'd be great for the current 10s. And Jack has done really well. But again, if you're setting your province up for success, wouldn't it be better to have balance there, an experienced 10, and obviously you're someone like Jack who if he continues to develop, will pass him out anyway. But that's the challenge for those coaches, is I don't think they're being given the squads necessary to. And Augustus is a good signing, but and they've got some good young players, but there's still a lot going out. Players who've been there and consistent for Ulster. So that's the challenge. But no one wants to talk about that, Neil. Like, you won't hear the RFU admit, well, I haven't heard them admit that they're putting budgetary pressure on. I haven't heard the CEOs come out and explain that this is short term pain, but there's a genuine plan long term to be back in the Champions Cup. It's just, from my point of view, and maybe I'm biased here as an ex-coach, is the coaches are certainly being put under pressure to deliver the same or better results with less resources, and that's not always that's all that's all, that's normally quite hard.
And Johnny, it seems a bit overly simplistic to, after tricky seasons like this, to say, okay, there's new coaching teams now in place at these provinces, so things will improve. It's obviously not as simple as that.
No, because change takes time as well. And you might get a bounce, like with a Clayton McMillan, you might get some different ideas and a real bounce out of that. And I think, I believe Munster are quite happy with what they're turning over at the moment. They're about to get into a really good place structurally. And that's great. And you get a new guy in there with new ideas and a lease of life, I think, with what's already there, because they do actually have a lot of good talent. But at the same time, it can come with teething problems. And if you end up struggling in any of those provinces before Christmas time, yeah, you might surge again after Christmas. But again, the pressure comes on, so it's not a guarantee at all that there's going to be any major change. And I think the biggest thing, I'd probably go towards Ulster and Connacht more on this, because I keep saying it, that Munster have a good squad and very good young fellas that seem to be kind of that step beyond the young fellas we talk about in Ulster. But you need firepower. You need the horses for it. And I think, Rod was very clear about that before. You need talent and you need guys that are going to break up a game for you. And if you don't really have that, it's great to get cohesion and punch above your weight. And that's always going to be the aim of any coach, especially when you look at budgetary cuts and all that. You're going to look to try and make the sum of the parts better than any individual. But individuals just break up a game, and they'll give you a moment. Look at Tacker Abrahams or someone like that, that can just take a step in the La Rochelle game and get through, and all of a sudden you have a score and weight lifted off your shoulders. You can't replace guys that are going to break up the game like that for you, have big moments, and that comes at the top end of the game. So the sum of the parts and all that is brilliant, and that's the aim of coaching altogether. But if you don't have the power, you're still going to struggle. And it's in the games where depths of winter, or you just struggle against a certain defense or something, you just need an individual to step up, don't you? Sometimes that's the difference, and all of a sudden, what could have been a loss becomes a win, and you get a bounce and you get momentum. And I think if you don't have that, it's still going to be very difficult, no matter what you do with coaching.
Yeah, can I, Neil, can I just flag? I
Go ahead.
think the generation that probably have set the standards for Ireland, so getting to number one in the world twice, so 2019 and 2023 going into the World Cup. So if you think about it, Furlong, Beelen, Bundy, Tadhg Byrne, Jack Conan, Gibson Park, Gary Ringrose, Robbie Henshaw, James Lowe, Ian Henderson, and I'm probably missing a couple, but I'm not saying their careers are over, but you'd certainly say the vast majority of their best years have been played. And then you have Healy, Peter Mahoney and Murray retiring this year, right? That's a big block of players that, you know, well, obviously the fellas retiring gone, but the others, if we get them to the World Cup, their age profile, we can get them. Like South Africa had older players, there's no problem, but we have to say that we're going to need another boost, seven or eight more young lads who are going to have to come through and have the same type of careers if the national team are going to stay strong. And obviously those players then play for the provinces, and obviously there's been an imbalance with a lot of them playing for Leinster, but if they're going to come through in a more spread out way, well, that'll be great for the provinces then, because they'll have guys to carry them and win those tight games. That's the challenge. So the young talent now, you know, the Joe McCarthys, just use him, of this world, Jack Boyle, there's two Leinster fellas, but the Craig Casey, Jack Crowley, Joe McCarthy, etc. They're going to have to carry a lot of weight, and we need a few more of them. We need a few more of them to come through, because I think that's the issue a little bit as well, is that we haven't replaced in the same numbers, you know, legendary players of Irish rugby, and it's hard to do that, but they're the ones that are going to basically drive on Irish rugby over the next 7 8 years, and that's the challenge for Farrell and for all the provincial coaches, is to find those and push them through.
Yeah, and you kind of need to make sure that the standards don't become lower for the next generation coming
Yeah.
through. Like you look back through at the likes of Peter O'Mahony and Conor Murray, who you mentioned there. I mean, they had it handed down to them by Brian O'Driscoll, Johnny Sexton, Ronan O'Gara. You know, you can see already where the standards are there, and you know, the likes of O'Mahony, Conor Murray, Cian Healy, etc. They're now handing it on to, as you said, like a Craig Casey, Joe McCarthy generation coming through. So I suppose you need to make sure that the standards don't drop along the way. I do want to get through into the matches because we do have a good bit to round up from the weekend and playoff picture for this weekend. Quickly, I'll talk about Leinster because obviously it was essentially a dead rubber at the weekend. All they needed to do was win one of their last two matches to get their top seed. They did it 76-5 against Zebre. Bert, it reminded me of that Glasgow game, the URC quarterfinal after they had beaten, or after they had lost the Champions Cup final to La Rochelle back in 2022, when Glasgow came to the RDS, and they stuck 70+ points on them. Yeah, it's all well and good. It was a nice little blowout and all that, but you can't assume that the slate is wiped clean after something like that.
No, not at all. Zebra were pathetic, really. You know, in the season, I know Leo was trying to talk them up before the match, and I think it would have been better just say, look, it doesn't matter who we play this weekend, we got to go out and smash them. You know, and not say that they're a great team and all stuff, because they're not a great team. And they came actually like they had no interest. They had no interest. It was pathetic from them. Leinster put them away, but I don't even think, as you say, it doesn't heal anything, you know. It doesn't heal anything. I'm not even sure if lifting the URC trophy at the end of the season, if they can do it, really will make up for the disappointment of Europe. But obviously, that's the only thing they can do now. Knockout rugby, like you heard, you know, the Northampton footage around there behind the scenes, and what Northampton were saying about Leinster, like everyone would say that now. I mean, it's the logical thing that they have this doubt around their mentality, they have this doubt around their ability to close knockout rugby, and until they start doing that on a consistent basis, it's going to grow and grow. So this weekend is another match for them, but it's really the quarterfinal, semi-final, final if they can get there. They just got to start shown more resilience there. But yeah, I wouldn't have, I didn't pay much heed to it, in terms of everyone looked brilliant. Jordy Barrett man the match. Like, of course he's gonna be man the match against an opposition like that, a player of his quality. So yeah, bigger tests lie ahead, and I think everybody is waiting to see how they react to being challenged.
And Johnny, if anything, seeing Jordy Barrett just run the show at the weekend, if anything, it probably just made a lot more people even more frustrated that he wasn't starting the week before.
Absolutely, and I'm still waiting for the honesty around the Jordy Barrett conversation because, like, I don't know. Correct me now, but wasn't there a thing around RG Snyman not starting when James Ryan was available? In my own head, I'm thinking there has to be a central contract issue here that he can't start then.
Well, look, there is, like, with Snyman, as far as we're aware, there is, if Joe McCarthy and James Ryan are fit and available, they had, they will be starting ahead of Orgie Snyman, and because James Ryan was out injured, that allowed Leinster to start Snyman. There's been talk that there could have been something similar for Jordy Barrett, but it was put directly to Leo Cullen the day before the Northampton match. Are you able to select Jordy Barrett in your starting 15? And he said he was. That selection was down to him. So if there is an issue, they've flat out denied it. I will say they've never denied that the Orgie Snyman clause exists. If
I
Leo
was
Cullen
surprised
has
about that.
if Leo Cullen has been asked about that before, he has just been a little bit coy about it, but he has never gone as far as saying, I am able to select him when James Ryan and Joe McCarthy are available, whereas he did with Jordy Barrett a week ago. So
Yeah,
that's
but when that information came to light around RG Simon, I was surprised because I was like, there it is. Like, that's the stuff we don't know. And that's actually helpful. I genuinely think it's helpful. So, I still can't believe that you wouldn't start a guy like that when you have him available. So if they haven't started him, then it's just an error. I think it's easy for everyone else to say, geez, like, obviously we've all picked teams and, it's very easy to set to pick holes in someone else's team. But God, like, it's Jordy Barrett and the way he's been playing, the influence he's had on the game. It's just it's a non-decision, but yeah, it is, to your point, it's more frustrating when he goes out and does that the week after. It's like, what's the point? And then the whole thing around, like, you signed him for a reason. It was a bit of a mad signing as it was. You've just done the same thing now with the team you've selected, as if you didn't have him. Like, he's helped you to get there and you haven't used him to get you over the line. So what is really the point? Like, what's the point of having that squad if you're not going to use it to make the hard calls? So I do think that's one of the more frustrating things. But to Birch's point, like, yeah, the URC is going to be scant consolation if they get there. And, like, you can get really tough knockout games in the URC, obviously, but I don't think Leinster have really played them with their out-and-out strongest selection. So you can't actually say that they've never been able to win those playoff games, but they haven't won the knockout games in Europe for a while now. And, to that mentality, it won't, absolutely won't compare to European knockout games, but you have to get over the line somehow. You have to build that resilience somehow, and you have to win the final, no doubt.
You're right, Johnny. The only one I would say is they went fairly strong last year to the Bulls after losing to Toulouse, and they obviously lost it. But obviously this year the difference is, and I think they were very conscious of that, of making sure they finished top this year, to not have to travel potentially in Europe. But it's a huge step for them, because the Springbok team and the South African teams in particular. I actually think Munster finished eighth. They love a crack at Leinster. You know what I mean? They love a crack at Leinster.
That's a look, but looking at it, it's pretty unlikely Munster can finish eighth. Looking at it, my guess would be they either finish sixth or seventh, or they miss out on the top eight. Just with the way the points are, it's difficult to see them actually landing in eighth place. Although I would agree, as you say, they probably would see Leinster a bit vulnerable at the moment and would fancy a crack at them. But it might have to be later in the URC if they all get there.
But isn't
Sure.
there a bit of a, like, anytime Leinster have been very strong, they've kind of blown Munster away with ease. Like, Munster have caught them, obviously, in the semi-final when Leinster weren't as strong. Now they still had a squad that they believed would beat Munster, but Munster haven't beaten the strongest Leinster side in a while, I would think. So, like, there's still a bit of a mindset there as well, isn't there? Kind of a mental battle for Munster.
Can I put it to you then? Would you still be confident Leinster win the URC without Caelan Doris?
I'm not confident Leinster win
If
the
they're play
URC
if
with
they're
Caelan
play if they're
Doris.
playing if they're let's say they're playing a final at the Aviva against the Bulls or a loaded Sharks team.
No.
Neil, I've lost all confidence in Leinster in a knockout game. Honestly, like, because you can't. I actually think Jack Caelan-Doris isn't the issue because Jack Conan is so
Yeah.
good. Like, Dan Sheehan gets injured, Ronan Kelleher. Like, it's not the depth is the problem, I don't think. I think it's just this lack of ability to close out knockout rugby type games. And until they start doing that consistently, even a once off isn't going to be good enough now. Like, I've been led down the wrong path so often with them, in terms of seeing them play brilliant rugby and then just bang, like it breaks up. Yeah, obviously they should win the URC, but until they actually do start winning trophies, I can't be completely confident.
But they should win the URC thing. I agree with you because, like, all of a sudden we were looking at Toulouse injuries and going, oh, Leinster have
Yeah.
York in the bag, and Northampton were just licking their lips, you know. So I think you just can't talk with them winning the URC at the moment. But the Caelan-Doris thing, I'm not a Leinster fan. I like Leinster. I'm obviously a Munster man, but like, and for the greater good of Irish rugby, but Caelan-Doris being injured is one of the biggest travesties. I've never felt so strongly about a Leinster injury because of the Lions. I'm delighted for, we go on to it in a minute. I know I'm delighted for Gary Ringrose because I thought last time round very unlucky, but Caelan-Doris to not be at the height of his powers is really, really frustrating. And back to your point on Leinster doing anything in the playoffs, I just think it's his calmness, his decision making, how he carries himself. He's just such an impressive person, like for quite a while now, you know. And I think you had a stat yourself on a tweet, if that's what I can still call it, but like 42 out of 43 or games or whatever it was that you had, it's just incredible. I saw a response saying, no wonder he's injured, but like he just didn't show any signs at all. He's been managed obviously through a few protocols, and like, you know, it's the worst timing ever for him.
Yeah, it was 44 out of Ireland's last 45 games that he's played. And of those 44 games, he started 43 of them. So of Ireland's like, and that's gone back to the two games Ireland played in the summer of 2021 against Japan and USA. Like, it's literally the entire 4 year cycle of the Lions that he has essentially been always available for Ireland. So it's such an awful blow for him. I might actually, Birch, I might stick on the kind of on the Lions subject as well. James Ryan obviously making it in. And I'd say he must be bloody delighted having he was one of the surprise omissions 4 years ago when Warren Gatland left him out. It seemed almost directly as a response to Leinster's defeat to La Rochelle in that year's Champions Cup semi-final a few days earlier, along with Johnny Sexton as well. Looking back through it, it's kind of something that came up in conversation with a couple of people over the weekend. If you look back at a lot of Leinster's toughest results of recent years and some of Ireland's toughest results in recent years, you could nearly pick out a pattern of James Ryan either being unavailable for those matches or taken off early or brought on too late.
Yeah, I think he is. He's one of those glue players.
And
You know.
has changed his game dramatically in the last few years. To it's it seems now he's given the responsibility, or I suppose the right almost, to just go around and hit rucks for the day.
Yeah.
And he seems to be doing it very, very effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he doesn't get the plaudits probably from pundits because it's not flashy, but I think it's a little bit like Dunnacha O'Callaghan combination with Paulie. You know, Dunnacha helped Paulie basically concentrate and do what he did, which they're both phenomenal. But as a combination, it worked really well. And I think James Ryan for Ireland and Leinster is very important. And Leinster missed him. Or is he as talented in terms of the overall things that RG Sleiman can do? No, but is he very consistent? Has he the right mentality? Yes. And I think Farrell appreciates that. And I'm glad to see him be a British and Irish line. And I think he's probably to go in there, not one of the favourites to be a test line as of now. But I think once he gets in and gets some rhythm, hopefully his injuries, he doesn't suffer any injuries on the tour because he has been unlucky with injury because the way he plays, he could be quite an influential player over there as well. So yeah, he's He is very important to Leinster in Ireland, but kind of goes under the radar a lot.
Johnny, like even picking out some of those matches that I kind of said that he would have missed, important games. Obviously, Northampton a few weeks ago, he's or two, just 10 days ago, he's unavailable for that. You go back to 2023 rugby or last year's Six Nations, misses the game at Twickenham against England. A few months before that, he's out injured for the New Zealand game at the Rugby World Cup. He's playing possibly his best performance of his entire career in the Champions Cup final in 2023 against La Rochelle. And he goes off injured. And as we all know, the sky falls down around that entire game after he goes off. So he can point back at a lot of Leinster and Ireland's biggest disappointments. And at the very least, he can say, hey, fellas, that one's not on me, you know? But I did just want to kind of give him a shout because I found it a bit strange last week, particularly, I suppose, around some of the British coverage where there was a lot of, oh, God, James Ryan's very lucky to be getting into that squad there. But I challenge anyone to name a second row who's been unlucky to miss out behind James Ryan. And I think if you were to argue, if there was a second row getting cut from that squad to make room for maybe if George Martin was fit and available, I think you'd be saying Scott Cummings before James Ryan is dropping out of that squad.
Yeah, I think, as Bernard said, I think James Ryan should have on his CV that he's a British and Irish Lion, whether that was the last time round or this time round. Obviously, the last time he was a shock omission, but he's just one of those players. That's why I said about Gary Ringrose, they should be a Lion. And timing is a huge part of that because, like, you've seen the list of unbelievable internationals that have never been Lions, and that's just how sport works, I suppose. But, like, James Ryan, he's not even a nailed-on starter for Ireland either, you know? So, like, it's kind of funny that you're dead right in what you're saying, yet he's not guaranteed with Ireland because of Joe McCarthy and Tadhg Byrne the way they play. But go back to your point around, like, La Rochelle in 2023, James Ryan, without being, you know, John Cline or Orji Snyman or the guys you'd see as the most physical on the pitch, he's an absolute brute enforcer around the pitch. Like, it was a time when you couldn't throw a ball back inside against Leinster because James Ryan was waiting there to just take a fella apart, you know, and he obliterates rucks. He really is very strong in contact. So, like, that's why he won't get the plaudits from the pundits because it's not something you see until you probably go back over footage or you're looking at reviews and stuff like that. You know, as a coach, you probably pick that up a lot more. And you have to have those guys. You can't have a whole host of, like, Joe McCarthy running around bashing fellas with the ball in hand and Tadhg Byrne, you know, in behind getting at poachers and doing what he does. You have to have a James Ryan and, you know, Birch said a glue guy. I'm always kind of conscious of calling guys glue guys because it makes it sound like they don't stand out, but it is exactly like you need those guys who are doing the teamwork stuff and doing the stuff that you won't see. Like, you know, when you're looking at the back five, you need carries, tackles, breakdowns. You probably get two out of the three of those when you look at any of those players, like, you know, and he does tackles and breakdowns unbelievably well. So that's why he's there and that's why he's respected amongst his group. Like, but I think you're right, you know, there's question marks over him if George Martin was available. Scott Cummings, like, I saw a bit of a highlight video on him and probably puts a bit of respect on what he can do. But, like, you know, if anyone from the other nations looks at James Ryan in depth, he has to be there, like, on the qualities that he brings.
Absolutely. Let's move it on to Munster and Ulster from the weekend. Munster 38, Ulster 20 at Thomond Park on Friday night. So Munster taking on Benetton 8 p.m. this Friday night. Must win game. Earlier on that evening, 7:35, Ulster away to Edinburgh, but Ulster out of contention for Champions Cup rugby. First half was brilliant to watch. It was absolute chaos at times. Not in the most positive sense. Sometimes it was really, really messy, but kind of fun to watch if you didn't have any skin in the game. But Birchley, Munster made the second half relatively boring at times, which is, I'm saying as a compliment, got their kind of couple of scores to put distance between the sides in that third quarter and just held Ulster off for the remaining 20 minutes. There was probably more flashes of brilliance in the opening 40 from an attack point of view, but would you be more impressed just with the steadiness and sturdiness of that second half?
Yeah, I thought Munster would take a lot from that. Obviously, their previous game had been a disappointing performance and result against Cardiff. They'd had 2 weeks to stew on it. I think there's a Munster, the Munster playing squad seem to be very united at the moment. There seems to be a real effort to finish the season on a high, and I thought there was obviously a little bit of nerves the first half, and it's hard to say, like, they don't look nervous because they're trying to play, but maybe just some of their accuracy and their keenness, like, and sometimes inability to do the basic stuff right. So the McCluskey try from, you know, from the line out pick and goal, they just like get caught, they nearly freeze there defensively. And I could see them dejected going back under the post, but Tyburn got them together and, you know, they responded really well to that. They obviously suffered a blow when they got caught trying to run out of their own 22 from an exit. And it ends up being a try again for Ulster. But when they got red zone entries, when Stockdale was yellow carded, they obviously found that spot straight away. They went wide from that scrum, got go forward. And I thought Crowley and Casey were very good. I thought Crowley looked really comfortable, ball in hand, and his ability to manipulate defenders and create space for those on the outside was excellent. And then, yeah, and then just how clinical they were in that second half. They made it boring, which is exactly what you want if you're in a game where you have to basically get maximum points, which they already had the bonus point wrapped up. So I think that was a perfect game for them. They snuffed out Ulster. You know, once Stockdale got that yellow card, I thought Munster put the game to bed. And I think Prendergast and the coaches will be really happy that Liam would be very happy that against a team who like to attack and have threats, you know, after the initial period, I thought Munster defended pretty well. And they actually forced a lot of errors from Ulster as they tried to play. So I thought it was good atmosphere, great atmosphere actually. And you'd
Well,
have to imagine.
particularly when Peter O'Mahony scores that try in the
Yeah.
second half, the roof and the ground nearly came off, and
Yeah, no, look at
like
the.
it was almost staged as if you had those kids down in the corner holding up the like King Peter and Conor Murray and Archer banners, but it was just incredible. But he looked, Johnny, like Peter O'Mahony from literally from the kickoff looked like he was on one, because he raced after that kickoff like it was the last kick he was ever going to chase in his life. Made a big tackle and turnover within a couple of minutes of the game starting. Obviously scored his try as well. I'd say like could and nearly should have scored another try, but made the unselfish decision to pass the ball back inside when I'd say if he backs himself 9 times out of 10, he gets over the line and scores that. But in fairness to him, if he passes the ball back inside 10 times out of 10, that's a try. So he made the smart decision and he got his reward later on as well. He was properly on one, and I reckon this weekend he's going to be fully up for it as well in his last match in Cork.
Yeah, I loved the fact that he passed the ball inside, because I think like Pete hasn't been respected by some people for the actual skill he has in the game. Like when I came into Munster, maybe because I was young and stuff, but like I played an under 20 game against Pete when he was with Cork Cannon and I was with UCC, and he shouldn't have been playing. He was too good. But like you see some of the skills that he had as a kind of an underage player that he brought into the professional game. Like he's actually incredible at what he can bring to the game. So like subtle touches like that, people kind of tend to forget that that's what he has in his game. Like, and then he's a mentality monster as well. So when Bernard's talking about like people going out of the Irish squad, there's a reason he's been kept in it, and people will question that for quite a while. There's no doubt there's a reason Pete has been around that squad for so long, because he's got a different mind, you know. So I loved seeing the difference between his subtle pass inside for the try, and the other one where he's like nearly blowing a hole in the ground because he wanted to touch the ball, and so
It
probably
was
like.
the angriest touchdown I've ever seen.
It was actually like, what is he doing? But I think it's funny because, you know, as much as Munster played really well, there was a moment where they were 17-10 down when Ty Byrne got a block down, which may not have happened if Jack Murphy managed his depth or his kick flight or whatever it was, or if Ty Byrne wasn't so hell bent on blocking him down, and all of a sudden they might not have hit back so easily. And then like even Jack's kick to Pete, it nearly set it up for him because it wasn't a great kick. It was a perfect decision, but it just tailed off a bit. It meant that Pete had to go climb above Doak to go get a ball and slam it through the turf. But yeah, you're actually looking at it going, God, is there more in Pete? Because now it's a good time for him to go on everything else. I understand that, but like he played such a good game, you're wondering, can fellas play forever? Like,
No chance you're getting him down in Con next season.
yeah.
I knew I had to bring up Carlos Spencer at Terenure at some point in this episode, but so I'm giving you the opportunity of getting some star power, like proper star celebrity power down to down to Temple Hill next year.
Oh, yeah. You mean Billy Holland isn't star power? No, the we actually bumped into him during the week, and Billy was talking about a junior coaching role. It'd be great for him to start at the under 21.
Well, like Ian Costello was asked about it on Friday night. Would he reckon Peter would ever get involved in coaching? And it's not the first time he's been asked about it this year. And like he has said it now, like it would be a real shame if Peter O'Mahony was never involved with, like, you know, Munster rugby in a coaching capacity or something ever again. But he did say for definite he probably does need a little bit of time out of the game first, and we'll give him the opportunity to come back in afterwards as well. But
yeah, that's what happens.
There's obviously an incredible rugby brain there.
Yeah, that's what happens to fellas, that they're like, they've done so much. Like, even, you know, Johnny Sexton took time away from the game, and did he really? He was kind of still plugged into it. But they've had such, you know, such long careers. They're always on the go. They get shorter holidays. The internationals are, they've got a funny season. Like, you know, you can't expect a fella like that to just have the want and the kind of headspace to just get straight back into the game. Like, you nearly need to see if you'd miss it, like, wouldn't you? But you're right, like, his brain, his line of power, his ability, or the subtle things around forward play. Like, he's obviously someone that, he's like Paul O'Connell, like, you know, and I know he's mentored by Paul for quite a while in his game, and, you know, the transition to captaincy and stuff like that. But you do have to give him the space, I think, and see if there's a grow there to come back into it. And if there was, you know, he'd be an unbelievable coach for, in many kind of levels of the game, like wherever he wanted to cut his cloth, you know. So he is one of those guys, you'd love to see him back involved in the game, and I think you have to give him the space. And we'd be doing that, I think. And
you're not going to be inviting him into the coaching ticket next year, no?
No, not like whatever links Terran you're having to the All Black space, whatever you've done up there, fair play to you.
I used my contacts book. I lent them my contacts book. But just to stay on O'Mahony, Birch, like, I mean, come on, there's only so much guarding the man can do. Get him back out there with a whistle in his hand sometime soon.
Yeah, he's a big void for him. I mean, he's just been the ultimate competitor all his career. I'm fascinated to see if he will come back into it. You know, obviously, I totally agree with Johnny. I think there's not as many characters like him or Sexton coming through. There's no obvious ones, and we've been very reliant on them. And then the challenge is, can those type of players do it as coaches? Can they influence, create the next that winning mindset? Johnny's obviously going about it now, obviously after a little bit sabbatical. And Pete, even his line out knowledge is obviously second to none. So yeah, I think there'll always be a spot for him somewhere in Irish rugby if he wants to go down that route. And whether it's straight in, whether it's in academy, whether it's in club game, I think it will be horrible to lose it. But obviously it has to be something that he wants to do.
Final point on Munster, and just because you mentioned the line out as well, Birch, the line out at Munster, it still terrifies me. They scored some nice tries off it at the weekend, and one was a maul try, which I don't think they'd scored off all season. But at the same time, I think in the first 50 minutes, I had it marked down as four lost lineouts in the first 50 minutes. Now, one of those, or I think you could also, there was another one afterwards as well where Munster actually scored a try off it. It was a lost lineout that fell straight back into Niall Scannell's hands. That's one you just get away with. But if it still comes down to one play where they need to hit their mark at a lineout, I still really, really have my doubts.
Yeah, I do too as well. But I do think, like, the players have massive faith in Codling. He was only back, you know, it's just not ideal. It's far from ideal having part-time coaches. It's no one's fault. But since he was the guy they went for, it was obviously a compromise that you had to have. I'd like to believe that another week there, you know, they had a short week training, the week of the Champions Cup semi-final, full week obviously going into Ulster. It wasn't certainly fixed. You would hope that the second week now, Treviso, just gets back to being bang on. But unfortunately, when you lose confidence in an area like that, it's actually quite difficult to get it back in a short term.
And also teams will go after a lineout more if they think that lineout is vulnerable.
For sure, and unfortunately for Munster, because maybe they're lacking a bit of confidence, the true into that front middle area a lot, and Isichuku is exceptional. You know, so where traditionally that'd be safer ball, it was actually ball that was under threat, and they've overthrown a lot as well. Now for the try, for Daly's try, it was a brilliant throw by Scanlon, but they've missed the back of the line out, and that's that ball is chaotic because your defence isn't set as well. So it's a tricky one for them, but I think they have the people in there to fix it. But I agree with you. I mean, if Benetton come and play, you know, if Munster are 65-70% of the line out, it could cost them a European Cup place.
You don't want to be loose with Menoncello and Brex knocking around,
no.
Johnny.
No, you don't. And they have firepower. Like I've spoken with that as well. That Benetton they've actually a very good set piece. They have a good line out. They'll definitely be going to put more pressure on Munster there as well, because like that line out, they even tried to throw to the front to Michael Millen, and then they lost that one. And when you're losing the banker ball at the front, you're really under pressure, you know. So you won't get, if you get to a playoff, you won't even get away with being in a playoff. Like you said, if you're coming down the stretch of a game, or if you're an important time in the third quarter and you lose some line out that you need to attack off, that's why I think their attack has been so good. I think Mike Prendergast can take a lot of credit for what they're able to deliver based on not being able to get the ball, you know, whenever he wants, which can be frustrating for an attack coach, you know.
I won't go in too hard on Niall Scannell missing that throw to Milne at the front. Last year in a match, I was thrown in, and we were trying one of those short little ones to the prop down the front. And I just got in over my skis on it, and I hit him in the ankles. It
it's
went
it's always
straight down into the ground.
It must actually be a hard throw, to be fair, because it's a throw and you're lashing it at a fella, like, you know. It's, I know.
Well, luckily we actually retained possession from it, because it just hit him in the legs and it fell back on our side, and someone managed to dive on it. So look, we retained possession of it. They all count. I do want to finish. I know we kind of spoke about the Ulster and Connacht situations earlier on in the podcast, but it's tough to get a read. Richie Murphy gave a good assessment, I think, after the match when he was speaking to us at Thomond Park on Friday about what the season has been like. He didn't kind of shy away from anything. He said the table doesn't lie, that they have to accept that their level now next season is Challenge Cup. And Bernard, go and have a crack at it now. Have a crack at it and use it as an opportunity to build your experience and build your confidence.
Yeah, 100%. And I think if you look at the season, you know, they have Bordeaux and Toulouse in the group stages, and like they had to go to Toulouse with a second ish string, but they shipped, I think it was 40-50 points, you know, and that can affect your URC form as well, you know, particularly if you have a young group, which Ulster do. So like those couple of those performances going into and out of Europe, or those matches going into and out of Europe, and the results put them in a situation at the end of the season where they're back in the challenge, they're in the Challenge Cup next year. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think it will, obviously financially it's a bad thing. And long term, you certainly don't want a team like Ulster in the Challenge Cup. But it may just give him a chance to manage his squad better next year. And I agree with you, yeah, you can have a cut off it. But certainly you saw Connacht this year, like the group stages of the Challenge Cup, it can sometimes be harder to get out to get knocked out than actually get through with some of the teams you're playing against. So you can actually rotate a little bit and still win. And I think that will give Richie probably opportunities to get confidence if they need, you know, if they're coming off the back of a tough URC game, or to rotate a few players and be ready for the next URC game. And hopefully in a year's time, Ulster have a squad that are not just a bit able to qualify for the Champions Cup, but go into it without, you know, fear of getting smashed by some of the bigger teams. So, yeah, I'd love to see, obviously the provinces have been quite quiet on recruitment what we know Munster have already done. And first, that's decent so far with Milne and Barron and Dan Kelly, you know, coming in. And obviously the recruitment that they had last year, the Kilgallens and the Tacker Abrahams, who've had injuries, you know, who have added to the squad. But Ulster and Connacht, you'd just like to know exactly what their squad is going to look like. And obviously, Connacht, we already mentioned, who the head coach is and who the defence coach is, because that's the big Well, sorry, it's one of the big areas for Connacht is obviously defence. And even the other night against Edinburgh, when he got themselves, they were 14-0 down, and he got themselves into a position at 21-all where you can go win it, and they can see the try for 50 meters by not filling the spot around the ruck, like off a first phase line out, where all Edinburgh are doing there is creating a ruck in the 10 channel to kick it, and suddenly the scrum half Shields realizes once or Connacht haven't filled that far side, and he goes 50 meters. Like, that's just unfortunately a snapshot of what Connacht have done all year. So I think Connacht needed a defence coach and a head coach, or a head coach who can cover defence. I think that they're hoping to get that, but either way, they need to get that nailed on. But also some recruits. I know they're actively chasing a lot of young Leinster Academy players to come into their academy, kind of copying the Finn Tracy model. And obviously that's worked out really well, and I don't have any issue with that. But you're losing like Sir Pearse O'Connor, who's going to Edinburgh. You've seen Andrew Smith already leave. Connor
Conor
Oliver
Oliver's
leave. There's
gone.
a lot of good talent leaving again, and not a lot of clarity around who's coming in.
Can I get a sense of, on Conor? I think like players come and players go all the time from teams. I don't know, am I just reading this differently? But I feel at Connacht in the last few years, when players have been deemed surplus to requirements, it seems to have happened overnight. I think when it happens at other provinces, maybe you can see the writing on the wall over the course of a year where the game time drops a little bit. I just feel with Connacht that players are going from indispensable first team players to not involved in match day 23s in the blink of an eye. Like you look at a couple of years ago, like the likes of Tom Daly, who was playing week in, week out, and all of a sudden then maybe played like two, three times the next season and before he was let go. John Porch this season is another. Conor Oliver, that's just the player that popped into my head when we said it there. There have been a lot of big experienced players that have just all of a sudden been dropped out of nowhere by Connacht. And it just, I don't know, it just feels a bit strange.
Jack Carty's another example. Like
Yeah, sorry, Jack Carty, perfect example.
persona non grata for most of the season. There was a risk. It looked like he was heading out the door. There was a chance he wasn't even going to get a final game, for Connacht. And thankfully for him, that situation has changed, obviously, with coaching setup changing. And he is now going to stay on. And like, they kind of sometimes, I feel, treat players like they have, like they're Leinster, that they have like 50 players that can do a job. They actually don't. They really only have a smaller group. And we look, if you can fall out with a player, but to marginalize as many players as they have, and unfortunately for them, like you're seeing Tom Farrell, like you've had him for a long time, and he was out the door, like he was being let go, and then you see what he can do in Munster. You see Andrew Smith going from persona non grata in Connacht to playing against La Rochelle and having a big influence. That's something they're gonna have to sort out. Like it's all well and good saying you don't have the money or the budget or the talent, but you're really, at the end of the day, you have to be judged on what you do with the talent you have. And I just think there's been far too many high profile examples. Like Conor Oliver had been a big part of a lot of good stuff for Connacht. And
Massive.
again, he was out of the he was in the fridge or the freezer actually until he's got back in the last couple of weeks, but he's been let go at the end of the season. And that's your hope. Have to hope the head coach is able to manage these players in a better way and get more minutes out of them.
Any idea what Oliver might have lined up or their offers on the table for him?
No, I haven't heard about him. I
That's
know
what I
they're
don't understand.
who?
Sorry, that's what I don't understand is that like they don't seem to be going to Connacht saying, I have this offer, give me a better deal, or else like it doesn't seem to be like that. There's letting them go and they're players that they need. Tom Farrell is the worst and best example of it. Like, what are you letting these guys go for? Fight harder for them. Like it's not even that there's a fight there, just let them go, So I don't understand what they're doing at all.
Like the Porch, John Porch was obviously, he was lucky that they did release him and he's gone to France and it gives him a chance. But like Porch was a good operator for them. Like Cordero's an interesting one. I know he hasn't worked out in Connacht, right? I don't challenge that, and I'm sure he's expensive. But like Bat have decided that he's worth a punt. You know what I mean? So if he goes to bat and rediscovers the form that kind of side couldn't get the best out of him.
It's going to be an interesting one to see. So Connacht finish up. They are against Zebre on Saturday evening, 5 o'clock. Aside from that, we also have the one scout for on Friday night. Friday night is actually more interesting, a lot more interesting than Saturday this weekend, because you've got Stormers and Cardiff kicking off at 6 o'clock. Edinburgh and Ulster kicks off at 7:35 p.m. Munster and Benetton then is at 8 o'clock. So Munster actually have a little bit of an advantage where, you know, depending on what way other games have gone, messages can get out onto the pitch to tell teams you either need to win by X amount or the result no longer matters or whatever. So the way we're looking at it, Munster in eighth place at the moment. Sorry, I'm just getting my URC table up here. It seems to have vanished. Munster in eighth place in the table. Level on points with Benetton in seventh. Scarlets 2 points better off in sixth. They're playing the Sharks on Saturday evening as well. And then you've got Cardiff, who, as I say, are away to the Stormers on Friday night. They're level on points with Benetton and Munster. So Munster will obviously be hoping that the Stormers do a job there in Cape Town on Friday evening. And they will also want Ulster to finish off their season on a high against Edinburgh on Friday evening. But that's how it's all going to unfold. Leinster and Glasgow on Saturday from 7 o'clock on RT2 and RT Player. You can follow a live blog as well on the RT News app and listen to Saturday Sport on RT Radio 1 for updates. But that's it for the podcast this week. Johnny and Bernard, thanks a million for joining as always. We'll be back next week where we're either talking about Munster and Leinster's playoff hopes or we're going to talk about a very sobering season for Irish rugby with just one team in the URC playoffs and Champions Cup for next season. We'll speak to you then.